Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, y'all, to the Near and Queer to My Heart podcast. I'm your host, Amanda G., and this is our 9th episode. For those who've been listening to us, welcome back and thank you. For the newbies out there, thank you for joining. We appreciate you. This podcast grew out of a queer storytelling / stand-up show called Greetings from Queer Mountain, which began in Austin, Texas, started by Michael Folk and Ralphie Hardesty, and it's now going strong in Austin, New Orleans, and New York City. This podcast was created as a way to continue the good vibes of that show in a new space and to reach a wider audience. Today, we bring you to the Memphis Comedy Festival, where I was honored to be a performer at the fest. It was a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of great folks and just enjoy some time off work. This festival made sure we had everything. They were so great. From the moment I arrived, no, before I arrived, they made sure everything was taken care of. They know most of us comedians are broke and traveling for our craft is hard enough, so they wanted to lighten that load. They had a van that drove us from venue to venue. They helped us find places to stay. They took us to the National Civil Rights Museum, which was amazing. Even when I arrived, they took me backstage where they had a green room full of snacks, good shit like fruit by the foot, aspirin, Tums, beer, whatever you needed. The guy even showed me as part of the tour, he took me to the bathroom and he whispered, "We have lady products if you need. And poopery." My favorite part of the festival was meeting all the amazing comics from all over the place. And thanks to the festival folks, they also connected me with the OAM Network Studios, where we were able to record this episode of Near and Queer to My Heart, and two other forthcoming episodes. This one, I met with Drew Lausch, an actor and stand-up out of New York. Drew is someone you can't help but smile around. He's so filled with good vibes and positivity. So let's do it. Let's get to Drew. To know Drew a little bit. I saw Drew do some open mic performance last night at this place called PNH, which was kind of a crazy place.
Yes.
I think it was 875 pitchers of PBR, so people were getting one for themselves.
Yeah, I know, truly.
It was that kind of place. Drew is a stand-up now living in New York, but we're going to get to know a little bit about your life, because you are not from New York, are you?
No. I'm originally from Fargo, North Dakota, which is a dream in itself, you know?
I don't know much. Is Fargo a big city? I mean, I've heard of it because obviously movie, TV show, it seems to be the thing there that people talk about.
Yeah, pretty much people only talk about the movie and the TV show, which is great. No, it's actually not as small as I think people give it credit for, because with the surrounding area, it's kind of like a probably population of like 300,000. It's not millions of people, but it's also not like, I feel like when I say I'm from Fargo, people expect bumfuck nowhere with 6.5 people and like a horse. And I'm like, no, it's a city.
Yeah. One street and it's just Main Street. And
right.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's actually bigger than I thought. See, because you assume Dakotas, I'm like, there's no more than 100,000 people total in both of them. There's a lot of stereotypes out there.
Yeah, everywhere.
I have a friend from Wapog, North Dakota, maybe? I don't know.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah. See? Like,
great
I
name,
you know,
though, Wapog.
Yeah, I think that I probably said it wrong. She played a lot of ice hockey and turned out to be gay. Surprise, surprise.
I'm like ditto, but a little different.
Parents were married?
Yep.
Are they still married?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they were... Yeah, kind of like high school sweethearts, and like they give me hope for love.
And they're from Fargo?
Yeah. Like, yeah, both born and raised.
Okay. Are your whole family, is your family from there, like going back?
Yeah, so my mom's family is more so from kind of the Virginia area-ish. But yeah, my dad's family, like born and raised North Dakota, and my mom's family mostly, like her immediate family all lives in the Fargo area. They live in Vancouver now, my folks, just because... Yeah. And Vancouver's really been cool for them. But yeah, but originally all from Fargo.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I always wonder how people get where they are and how they end up in Fargo and then decide to stay there or not, because you obviously, you know, you live in New York now, so you didn't stay there.
No.
When did you move?
When I was 18, so when I went to college in upstate New York at Ithaca College. So,
Ithaca area.
You do?
Yeah, yeah. I went to school in New York, and my mom was trying to convince me to go to Cornell. Not that I didn't apply. I don't know if I would have gotten in, but her big convincing thing was that they make their own ice cream there, I guess, and that they have an ice cream contest that the students can make their own ice cream and enter this contest. And she's like, "You'd like to do that? You'd like to make your own ice cream? Go to college in the middle of New York." And I was like, "No, thanks."
You're like, "I gotta go make some ice cream if there's one thing I do when I get to college."
Yeah, that's my dream. Like Baskin Robbins has 31 flavors, but I know there's a 32nd. Out there, and I'm gonna find it.
Yeah, you will. I feel that.
Why Ithaca? Why did you choose Ithaca?
So I went to college for musical theater. There's like this huge audition process, and so I sort of auditioned for like what I was told were like, you know, the like best schools in the country for musical theater, and then, you know, got into a few, and I visited Ithaca, and I really, really enjoyed the atmosphere I got, and so yeah. And I went there.
How was school there? Because it's a college town, right?
Yes.
Because you have Cornell, you got Ithaca. I think there's another college nearby, or is it just the two?
Well, there's like Cortland, which is kind of nearby. And that's kind of like the rival school to Ithaca, which is like, I mean, like Ithaca doesn't deserve to have like a rival school. You know what I mean? It's like we had like one football game a year and it was like amazing. But like, you know.
Yeah. No, my school, we lost freshman year. Our football team lost every single game. So
I know.
I was like, we don't really deserve that either.
Truly. I know. The only, I liked football games at Ithaca because it was like a reason to pound tequila shots at like 8 a.m. and like have it be totally justifiable.
And normal.
Yeah, exactly.
And normal. Truly. And somebody else is drunker than you.
Yeah, exactly. You're not the worst one there.
Yeah. No, Ithaca, it's cold there too.
Yeah. Not as cold as North Dakota though.
True. So you're slowly going a little less, like 10 degrees warmer.
I know. I was so mad. I wasn't really between Ithaca and a school in Miami, but there was a school in Miami that I was thinking about going to, and like by year three at Ithaca I was like, why the hell didn't I go to Miami?
I could have been in Miami, in a
Speedo and a dream, you know?
Yeah, me and the Golden Girls just hanging out.
Truly.
It could have been me.
Yeah.
Miami's the trip. I don't know. I went to Miami once for a girls trip for a weekend and I hated it. It was,
oh really?
Yeah, it was very like, you had to dress up to go everywhere. Even just like, you can just like go to the beach and chill. Like everyone was dressed up. All the clubs, like you couldn't get in. The guys had to have a coat and like nice shoes and pants and... it was also terrible. My friend was 8 months pregnant at the time, so we did go to the club.
You guys were like, Miami.
Yeah, we're like, we're doing this. And she was like, this is my last hurrah before I have a kid. And so we were at the clubs, and people didn't like looking at a pregnant lady. I'll tell you that.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah, it was very, she wasn't drinking.
She was just doing her thing.
We had a DD. We had a designated driver. So we were like, this is fine. And she was still, you know, she could dance a little bit and get her. No one wanted to, like, it was a weird buzzkill for a lot of people because Miami's very judgy too. And they'll let you know.
Yeah.
Like they would tell you to your face. And I was like, whoa, can't you just go over there and talk shit about us like across the room like normal people?
Definitely.
You didn't go to Miami. You went to Ithaca. You graduated college.
Yeah.
4 years?
Yep. Four long years, yes. Yeah.
Four long, cold years in the middle.
Yeah.
Because the other thing with Ithaca that I remember, because we were stuck behind this truck. I think it's like a one-lane road that gets there.
Yeah.
And we were stuck behind a truck with a bunch of logs on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this truck, there was like 10, I don't know, maybe 15 cars deep behind it, and we couldn't get around it.
Yeah.
And it was scary because it was such a big truck. And I just remember, I'm like, this is literally like carrying logs to probably build a log cabin, like those giant logs. And I was like, this is not the place for me.
Yeah. The interesting thing about Ithaca that was like different from kind of the snow cold in North Dakota was that Ithaca has a lot of hills. So like, so if you're driving, like North Dakota, we, you know, it's like we have our four wheelers and it's like, we're just going to like, snow doesn't faze us and whatever. But like, there was, I remember one snowstorm where I had like a smaller car at the time, which was great and fine until there was this huge snowstorm. And one of my girlfriends and I were like, oh, like, what do we need right now? We need to go down the biggest hill in Ithaca and get a quesadilla. Like, that was like our, we just like had to go. And we just didn't think about it. It was like, it was a blizzard. And then, so we like got our quesadilla, great. And then we like had to turn around and go back up this hill.
Oh, Jesus, and a blizzard.
And we couldn't get it. And so much so, like, it was my car. I was like driving and my friend's name was Caitlin. I was like, you have to get out and push. Like, you have to get out and push.
I was like, this is not what I signed up for.
No, so she was kind of bummed. And then we had to like park it at this halfway house, actually, which is funny.
Halfway up the hill, halfway house.
Truly, truly, yeah. But it was good.
The quesadilla was delicious.
the best.
I was like, you better remember that we on your deathbed.
It. Yeah, we earned it, too.
It's like, oh, that quesadilla was worth it. Those are your dying words.
Yeah, definitely.
Were you out at this time?
Of the closet?
Yeah.
Yes.
Not out pushing the car.
I was like, no, I told her to get out and push the car. I was like I was chilly. Yes, I was. When I got to, I went to college for musical theater. It's like everybody knew. But yeah.
And you're probably around a more supportive environment.
Right. Yeah. That was my sophomore year. So by the time of my sophomore year, I was very much like I'm out and proud and like
don't
waving
care,
the flag.
Who knows
it. Yeah, definitely.
So, but when did you first come out?
I don't know. I feel like I sort of trickled out.
Yeah, I usually ask the question, and I probably should have. I'm sorry for my immediate turnaround. But
no.
I was like, this conversation is like boom, 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 and we're going to keep it going, boom, boom,
oh,
boom.
Oh, yeah,
but
no stress.
I usually ask people a bunch of questions at once, like rapid fire, which also is stressful. But it's kind of like, when did you come out to yourself? When did you first come out to somebody else?
Okay.
And then when did you start coming out in your performer life to strangers, basically?
Yeah.
Because those are all different. Because I think a lot of times they conflate the coming out process into just one. Oh, when did you come out?
When was the big event?
Yeah, like when was the party where you had a reveal and it was you?
Yeah.
But it's not that simple because a lot of us came out. Like I know for me, I like kind of figured it out and then I held on to it and I repressed it.
Totally.
And then it came out and I put it back down and it came out and I put it back down. And then finally when I was ready, so I was already kind of out to myself.
Yeah.
Then when I was out to myself, it still took me a minute to come out to somebody else.
Yeah.
And then to come out to like everybody else and then to start performing and talk about it to strangers in bars and be ready for whatever. You know, I live in New Orleans. I live in Louisiana. I never know. And I honestly can say I've missed, like, I was very apprehensive about doing lesbian comedy, especially in like smaller towns or places that if you look at their voter history, they might not seem as friendly. But I've been very surprised that I haven't really had any problems.
Same.
So, but that's a whole other process of like coming out to an audience.
Totally.
So.
I mean, sort of the same thing. Growing up gay in Fargo, North Dakota, which is like what a lot of my comedy is about, just because there's so much, like, you understand as well. But I think, I don't know, it's so weird because I feel like I remember like at a young age sort of being like, I think I want a boyfriend, but it never really stuck. And then it was sort of like, okay, you're going to have girlfriends and it's going to be great. And so then like, I mean, I was like a really big player in the sixth grade. Like everybody wanted Drew's D in like, you know.
Drew's hand holding.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know what y'all did in Fargo.
I know. We like drank Mike's Hard Lemonades and like.
Oh, badasses.
Yeah, totally. I know. We were reckless.
But. Someone stole mom's like one cigarette from one mom and y'all shared it.
Exactly. I know. Exactly.
And nobody knew how to smoke your age.
No. Yeah, truly. We just like threw it at each other and we're like, you feeling something?
Does this work?
I know. Are you buzzing? Yeah, so, so I feel like I sort of had some thoughts at an early age, but obviously, you know, that wasn't really entertained. And then I definitely feel like I was someone that, like, everybody kind of knew before I did. And that, like, really made me mad. Like, truly.
You're like, why didn't you just tell me?
Well, they did, which is what made me mad.
Oh,
like,
no.
Well, it was like, I don't know, kind of, you know, that middle school age-ish, and I told a joke about this last night, but it was truly like when I decided to kind of quit soccer and sort of like, and I didn't mean to like cut those ties with those like, you know, guy friends, like we were bros and stuff, but and do musical theater camp, it was sort of like that was definitely like a like line in the sand. And then everybody just sort of was like, oh, Drew must be gay. And at that time I was kind of like, well, maybe, like, I don't really know yet, and because you're telling me I'm this, I don't want to be this because I want to, like, forge my own path and, like, you know what I mean?
Also, it, like, puts you in another box and it makes you feel, like, a different or an outside. Because I was always scared of that. I was like, oh,
totally.
if this, like, secret comes out, then everyone's going to put me over here and that's the only thing they're going to see me as, and I don't want that.
Yeah.
And
because
so,
I'm so much more than just, like, this one thing. And like,
yeah.
And So, yeah, that kind of happened. And then in, like, so eighth grade, I was sort of doing the musical theater camp, and I think I was like slowly kind of like edging myself towards being like, okay, I think you might be into dudes, and that's gonna be what it is. And then when I was 16, there was this guy that we were both in theater, and we sort of had like a rivalry. We would like Facebook message each other like fighting, but it would be like, I know, like kind of hot.
Yeah.
But like we would Facebook each other and both of us would like call each other gay behind like each other's backs all the time. Like it was kind of like a game, like who's the gayest, and like you never wanted to be the gayest, I guess. And then, and he and I had to do this like choir, we had to do this like choir quartet, and it was like two of us and then two girls. And then like there was like literally one day over Facebook Messenger where he was like, I think I have feelings for you. And he just like said it.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then, yeah. He said it.
And you were like, I win.
Well, definitely. I know. I was like,
I won.
I know. I was like, who's on top? joke intended. But and so he said that. And then I like kind of paused and I immediately wrote back and I was like, yeah, I think I have feelings for you too. And then we kind of started like a secret relationship, which was because, you know, Fargo, like I wasn't ready. He was very much like, he was kind of out, or more so, he was like, I'm bisexual and doing his thing. And so then, so that point on, I was kind of like, okay, I'm definitely gay, but I don't think I'm going to let anybody know. But then, of course, like I fell madly in love with him. So then I sort of started telling all my like close friends that like, hey, I'm like dating Hunter and it's a secret, but like I love him. And like, you know what I mean? And so that sort of felt like I was like, I kind of accepted it myself. I wasn't ready for everyone to know, but I was ready for a lot of people to know. But then like Scandal, like a lot of people ended up finding out. And then I got like super, super in my head and scared and ended up ending the relationship because I was just like, I'm sorry, like this is too much for me. And then that was kind of, and then I was sort of just like, oh God, like I know I'm gay, but I don't want people to know. And then I went to college and for like a week was like, I'm bisexual. And then like, you know, I mean, gay by May, like, yeah.
Yeah, no, I always describe like, because there's always an extra layer, I feel like that, you know, if that was a heteronormative relationship, it would have been a little different because there is that extra layer.
Totally.
And, you know, sometimes it's tough, but it's, you know, it's also kind of what shapes us as to, like, who we are.
Yeah.
Which is always kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's so funny now. I'm sure you can agree, like, looking back, I'm like, I mean, when you were in sixth grade, you should have just been like, I'm a gay, and, like, here we go. Like, take it or leave it. But when you're in a conservative community, it's just, like, a different ballgame.
And Fargo's conservative?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Fargo was, of all of the states that, like, the younger generation, like, the millennial generation, like, there were three states that the majority voted for Trump, and North Dakota was one of them.
You were
one of
them.
I was like, thank God, North Dakota, like, get it together.
You still registered to vote there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like New York, they don't need your vote.
They don't need me. Yeah. Now I'm registered in New York, but for like, I guess the next elections, cause I got my ID and stuff. But yeah, at the time, North Dakota.
Okay. So you could put in that vote.
Yeah, definitely.
So you graduate Ithaca, you right away move to New York City, or do you take some time to do something else?
Yeah. So I did the Utah Shakespeare Festival for like 4 months, which was super fun.
Oh wow, 4 months?
Yeah.
Damn, that's a long time.
Yeah, Southern Utah.
That's a lot of Shakespeare.
I didn't actually do a lot of Utah. I didn't actually do a Shakespeare show though. I did Mary Poppins.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then after that, I had a gig in like Central Coast, California, doing Beauty and the Beast. So, yeah, just loving that Disney life. I played the magic carpet because, again, dreams are coming true always.
Like, and fabulous.
Yeah. And then so that went until like December. And then I moved last year, January, to New York. And I've been there now for like a year.
And when did you start doing stand-up? Because you've always had a theater background. Was that the path you wanted? Is Broadway what you're looking for? Or getting on a tour?
Yeah, I mean,
writing,
it's,
you know.
Yeah, it's definitely changed now. When I first was like auditioning for schools and stuff, I was very much like, Broadway will be my, like, that is my thing and it will be my thing. And like, and then sort of as I went through a pretty rigorous musical theater training program, I think I was very much like locked into that. And then my senior year, I was sort of like losing the love I had for it a little bit just because I was like, I think I have other interests and I don't really know how to express that or do that. And then at the end of my senior year, we had to do this like project called our 10-minute cabarets, which was essentially like you get 10 minutes and you get to tell it like whatever story you want and you have to sing and like whatever. And I found, I mean, I did sing, but I found that like I like wrote this like script and it was like all of these stories, and I found... I felt like I was like writing jokes and like writing like monologues for myself and whatever, and I really, really enjoyed it and had like a great response. From there, I was like, okay, I think I want to give stand-up a try. And I'd always been into it. Like, I'd watched it, and I'd heard a bunch of, like, stand-up before, but that, like, winter break, I, like, went home, and I wrote, like an hour of material. Not great material, but I wrote what I thought was really great material.
Well,
but
course.
I, like, yeah.
Our first sets, we all thought, right. I mean, for us to get up there for the first time, we had to think, like this is amazing shit.
Yeah. No, like, I'm going to get discovered now, and it's going to be...
I don't know why it took everyone else 15 right. years, but...
Exactly, I know. You're like, comedy isn't a hard business. I'm killer at this. But yeah, so I did that, and then I had one of my good friends from college had been wanting to do drag, and so he and I sort of, like, produced and put together this, like, drag slash stand-up show where he got to perform that, and I got to do stand-up. And that was sort of, like, my first shot, but then it was, like, I took, you know, time off to do those gigs. So I was always writing, but I wasn't performing. And so then last, January 2017, I, like, really... Well, I say that, you know, kind of February, I started really going to mics and, like, kind of digging in, and I, like, took a class and, like, so then I kind of went for it.
That's kind of how I used to host this show. We don't do it anymore, but it was called Queerlesque, and it was burlesque by, for, and about the queer community.
Yeah.
And so we had, it was like drag, and it was all sorts of different types of performance.
Cool.
It was burlesque. It was just random, like, kind of clownlesque. We had all these different types of lesque, I guess.
Yeah.
But I would host it, and I always wanted to do stand-up, but I wasn't ready. But the hosting was good, because it's like, even if your jokes fail, you're like, and now here's somebody that's going to get naked for you and that you know and love. And it was kind of this buffer that you had, and that kind of broke me in. And then when I did that, I kind of had that adrenaline that you get from performing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to do this stand-up thing.
I know. As soon as you catch the bug a little bit, it's like, oh God, I want that feeling again. Like, I want, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I definitely chase it. The other thing with theater, I was actually talking to another comic in San Francisco last week, and she was saying, because she had a theater background too, and what was the difference for her was theater, your other characters, you know?
Uh-huh.
And she's like, some characters, like, I could really get into, and I can identify with them, and I can be like, this is me, but then stand-up's you.
Yeah.
And that's the piece. Like,
totally.
That's the different piece. So you have the theater background, so that makes you able to get in front of an audience with not a problem or less of a problem, probably, than other folks. And then now, but now it's you. You have to put you out there.
Yeah.
And I saw some of your comedy, and some of your comedy, you know, it seemed very personal.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm like, thank you so much. That's the nicest thing anybody's ever said.
No, it's important to, you know,
totally.
Have that piece.
Yeah, I think, well, a few things. I completely agree. I'm doing the Dallas Comedy Festival a little bit later in the month.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's awesome.
But they sent me this, like, a questionnaire, you know, to, like, promote or whatever, and... it was like, so you have a theater background. How has that helped your stand-up background?
Oh.
And which is, you know, a good question. But I find it so fascinating because, like, sometimes, and this isn't like I'm patting myself on the back or anything, but sometimes people are surprised by the amount of time. Like, your girlfriend earlier today was, like, a little bit surprised and, like, I think...
Yeah, just to back it up, he's been doing comedy about a year now.
Yes,
and
that was
the surprise because we got to see Drew last night, and he was hilarious, and he killed it in a room full... It was a dive bar full of very drunk people, and everyone shut up to listen to him because they were like, this guy's got something to say, and then they were busted up laughing, so it was a really cool experience.
Yeah. And again, this isn't me like...
Catch yourself!
Yeah, totally. But like, the interesting thing about it is, like, I feel like I'm as green or as naive in terms of, like, you know, like, writing jokes and, like, you know, like, crafting what is the setup, what is the punch. That I'm like, I'm totally just a year in, and it's awesome. But the being on stage and the comfort you find, like, that was developed a really long time ago for me. So, like, so that was never a daunting part. And I think sometimes with other comedians, like, the writing, like, it's like they can write a killer joke, but then it's like, how do you find your sort of stage persona or your stage presence? And that just kind of came naturally, just because I've been on stage, you know what I mean?
And
in a different
training.
Form.
Yeah, because
totally.
For me too, it was like, I remember the first time I went up, comedian in New Orleans came up to me after my set and was like, can I make a suggestion? And I was like, oh fuck.
God,
and then he was like, just take the mic stand and move it to the side. And that was the whole, and I was like, I didn't think about it because I hadn't been on stage. I hadn't had a microphone. And then I started overthinking over the next 6 months. I was like obsessed with how do I stand? How do my hands move? Should I move around more? Should I stay still? Should I change my voice? You know, should I raise my voice or talk faster or talk slower or whatever? And I got in my head about it. But like just that simple thing of like moving the mic, that's probably something that you are like knew 10, 15 years ago, you know?
Yeah. Well, just, I mean, definitely, I you know, kind of the logistics, but again, also just like breathing on stage, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is sounds so simple, but like you forget and then you're hyped up and then, you know what I mean? It's like truly. Oh, there was, oh, also, I think this goes along with what we were talking about, but sort of like finding your like persona on stage or whatever. I think especially if you listen to beginning recordings of my comedy, it's very much like I created like a caricature of Drew, you know, like just this like effervescent, like, you know what I mean? Like he's gay and he's fun and he's like dreamy and everything's great, which is obviously like a part of my personality already, but like,
but it was extra.
Yes. It was very heightened. And I was listening to like before I performed last night, I was listening to a set and like, you can hear me start that way. Like, I'm like, hi, you guys, my name's Drew, and, like, really giving it. And then halfway through, I'm like, okay, all right, sorry, like, I'm just gonna, and, like, and then I, like, brought it, and I was like, oh, like, but that's another part of probably, like, your stand-up persona or your character is that, like, also you don't have to do this, like, only character. Like, you can also kind of bring it down and, like, really talk to people, which is cool.
Well, that's what you think because you're like, the audience needs to respond to me, so I need to come out there and get their attention.
Totally.
But I feel like some people just have that natural stage presence where they can just go out there and just be themselves, and that is actually more attractive to an audience.
Yeah.
Because they're like, this person's just talking from their heart versus like, oh, they're trying to get me hyped up. Like, it's like, I can't hear you. Like, that's what I feel like. You're like, the next line is going to be like, how are we doing? I can't hear you. A little louder, you know. It's
I know. You're like, let's, you're like, they can hear you just fine.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my thought is gone. I had one, and then it flew away.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah, it does.
Is this your first comedy festival?
No. So the first one I did was the Laughing Devil Comedy Festival in New York. Yeah, so I did that guy, and then I did the Sacramento Comedy Festival, which was super, super cool. At the Comedy Spot. The guy that owns that, Craig, is really awesome. If you ever find yourself there, he's really, really great.
You never know.
Yeah, truly.
I have been in Sacktown quite a few times.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's close to San Francisco.
Yeah, so Sacramento Comedy Festival, I competed in the World Series of Comedy.
How was that?
I really loved it.
I did one comedy competition in Ventura, and I actually made it to the next round, but the next round was 3 weeks away, and I was not going to come back to Ventura, so I ended up not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very stressful. I kind of like the just performing in a like once you're in the festival, like you're in versus the competition where it's like good job, but fuck you. Like,
I was having a conversation with another comedian about the difference between the festival atmosphere and the competition atmosphere, just because even when I got here, I've done mostly like, cause Sacramento was a competition and the one in New York was a competition and the World Series of Comedy was a competition. So I did like the Finger Lakes Comedy Festival in Ithaca, actually, which was kind of like a full circle moment. But that was the first like, oh, you're just kind of like going and you're going to hang with some comedians and you're going to perform and it's going to be great. But I went to this one and I was like, even last night at the mic, I was like, okay, like psych yourself up. And I was getting in that like competitive zone almost.
Yeah, like that Eminem mom spaghetti shit.
Me, yes, that's exactly
totally
I was doing. I know, Eminem and I feel like have a lot in common, you know, we're like sisters. I do enjoy, I mean, I think a competition, I think it riles you up in a good way too. Like, I think you can kind of dig in and it's like, okay, it's like, get out there and perform and do well because like, you want
to
win.
Yeah, because you have to or you have to leave.
Yeah, but no, the festival atmosphere is, it's, I mean, it's a little bit nicer. It's like, because it's like, we're just kind of celebrating and we're not like pitting each other against, you know, one another. And like, obviously comedy is subjective and like, you know, all of the eye of the beholder and blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely into the festival zone. The World Series of Comedy was kind of an intense competition, but I did so I did like the rounds in at this club in Laugh Boston, and I ended up taking like fourth in that, in the satellite is what they called it, I guess. But but it was like three rounds, and each round like I got to move forward, and so I think
that's awesome.
Totally, and it was definitely a nice like. The first festival I did, I did okay on my second performance, but my first performance, I told this joke about cat AIDS, and like the audience was just like filled with these like elderly women, and like but I was like literally I only had probably like 15 minutes of material, if that, and like seven that I was like, I think everybody's gonna laugh at this, you know?
And they're just thinking about their cats. And right. Like, well, young man.
Exactly. Well, and I told this joke and I was like, your cat AIDS joke is gonna kill. Like, it's gonna be perfect. And I told, and I had, and it was almost like, I mean, I'd bombed at like an open mic before, but it was kind of the first like performance where I told my first joke and was like, it's going to be awesome. And literally this one woman in the front row, just like, I will never forget her face. I'm like flushing thinking about it, but she literally was just like, and I was like, oh my goodness. And so it didn't go so well. So then this World Series of Comedy, when I was like, killing it in the competition, I was like, I am going to be a comedian and it is going to be great, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know if you have any tricks for that, because I know it's hard. Like, when I had a bad set maybe a month ago at a bar a block and a half from my house. They do an open mic every Monday, and I go there pretty, because it's a block and a half from my house.
Right.
It's the one that I push myself to go to, because I really...
Important. You do have to do that, you know?
And you have to keep going to mics and trying new stuff. And I went and I did my three... It was like only a three-minute set, and it just, like, died.
Yeah.
And I just felt so terrible. Like, I beat myself up for like 2 weeks. And then I'm like, what, you know, I was like, what am I doing? You know, my girlfriend's like, it's just one show.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to like get yourself back in that place to get back out there.
Yeah.
And that was a place where I was like, I always do well here, but you're not always, there's no 100%, there's no guarantee. And it's okay. It doesn't make you like, you're not like, I should quit comedy and never do this again.
No. Because
you do the
not.
Same stuff in front of five other audiences and they love it.
Right. Yeah. I think it's just sort of the new. I don't know. I guess I just think it's like when you like bomb the first time and you're like, oh God, I'm nobody. And then you get up and do it again and it goes better. And then I think you just learn to like laugh it off. And even like, even that story, like I kind of hold it near and dear to my heart, because I told like a trashy cat AIDS joke and no one laughed. And I'm like, that is something that you did, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Drew, for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My heart,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm excited to see you the rest of this Memphis Comedy Festival.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
I think the moment my parents really knew I was gay was when I walked in a Gap fashion show in sixth grade, because you can have it all. And the guy that was in charge of the fashion show was like, all right, boys, we're going to need a little extra pizzazz when you get to the end of the runway. So most of the guys like popped their collars or did a little spin. When I walked down the runway, cartwheeled down the runway, I got to the end and did two fast little jazz squares and then hit this winning position. And I have a feeling this is the moment when my dad looked at my mom and was just like, Drew's gonna be a dick sucker or something. And oh, how I have blossomed. But I recently moved to New York City, which has been super great. They love the gays there. Gays everywhere. And seriously, they're everywhere. But I recently moved to New York City, and it's funny, the last time I was in New York City, I actually had some trouble with the police, which is surprising because I'm white. They get us too. But I was dating a guy at the time who had a bit of a drug problem, because I choose danger. And we were driving out of New York City, and this cop car pulls us over, and when he asks for my boyfriend's license and registration, my boyfriend opens the glove compartment and a grinder falls out. So the cop looks at me and is just like, get the fuck out of the car, motherfucker, and like riffs me out and is like, put your fucking phone down, because I was in the middle of an Instagram and it was peak hours and I wanted a light. And questions because he assumes I'm trying to smuggle drugs out of New York City, which was obviously what I was doing. So he's like, what were you doing when you were in New York City? And I was like, auditioning for the Book of Mormon. And he's like, what's in your backpack? And I'm like, my custom-made tap shoes. So you would think after I say my custom-made tap shoes, which is like arguably the gayest thing that has been said ever, then he'd be like, all right, we're going to let this fool go. But instead, he was like, all right, I'm going to have to call for some backup. And like, I love the idea of this conversation because he had to call the station and be like, we're going to need some backup. And they were like, what do you got? And he was like, two faggots and a pair of tap shoes. Like, send help. Also, just as a side note, two faggots and a pair of tap shoes sounds like an off-Broadway show I'm gonna start writing. So make sure you're on the lookout for that. So these two cop cars show up and they put me in a different cop car, you know, to separate the gays. It stops our sparkle sunshine from working. And this cop starts asking me questions. He's like, have you ever been arrested before? Like, where are you from? And I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm gonna have a criminal record. Like, I'm obviously not going back to college. Like, but on the forefront of my mind was just like, what is gonna happen to my custom-made tap shoes? And that was a story of white privilege. Fun for the whole family. But like I said, I've been in New York for a bit and it's been super fun. I love like all of the experiences I've been having. Like the other day, this guy came up to me and my two girlfriends and like he was gonna kind of heckle us. So he goes up to one of my girlfriends and is like, hey, why the long face? And she's like, all right, like, you know, we're leaving. But before we can go, he then puts his face in my other friend's boobs and is like, oh, hello. And I'm thinking, thank you for the one laugh. So I'm thinking in this moment that I'm gonna have to man up and be like, hey, like, which I don't do often, a rare occasion for me. But I was like, I'm gonna tell this guy off. But before I can say anything, he turns to me and then goes, and you know what? If I were gay, I'd fuck the shit out of you. And I have never felt so included in my whole little life. In my whole life. You know, now he and I are dating. Thank you guys, I'm close.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you to our sponsor, SpeedShrink. Looking for a new therapist, but tired of doing online research that only leads to you finding a therapist who you think is great and then turns out to be terrible? Try our new service, SpeedShrink. Just like speed dating, but for shrinks. Meet 20 shrinks in one night and find the right one for your emotional needs. Each event includes fun icebreakers that help you decide if this shrink is the right match for you. SpeedShrink. Thank you so much to our guest, Drew Lausch, for sharing his world with you. Thank you to the Memphis Comedy Festival and the OAM Network Studios for helping us out with this podcast. Special thanks to Jessa Fallon and Ryan Golub for your help editing and producing the show. And of course, thank you to all our friends and supporters out there. You can catch Greetings from Queer Mountain live in New Orleans, Austin, and New York City. Check out our Facebook page for more information. Thank y'all.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. juvederm.com. That's juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.